What's it all for?
Various artists.
Mitchell McGrath is a Tamaki-based designer and artist whose work explores notions of spatial perception through these embodied material exploration of imaging techniques that is transferred into works of embodied materiality in spaces, experiences, and objects. In his current exhibition at Window Gallery, A View for Each Eye, McGrath presents these beautiful luminescent installations of colour and its shifting movements through space, an exploration of these fluxing wavelengths of chromatic colours in relation to our own bodily position. The colours and form shift and pivot as one moves throughout the space, a dance of colour that rewards a lengthened viewing, a viewing individual to each eye, person and body, as one delves into the exhibition's shifting chromatic landscape. I had a chat with Mitchell about the show and overall practice.
Kia ora, I'm Mitchell, and my practice is more of a design, expanded design practice. So at the moment, the exhibition at Window Gallery, I was doing material tests and coming across this really sort of mesmerizing window film, dichronic window film that's generally used, applied on glass, architectural glass, and depending on your position to it, it shows different colors. So I was working with it probably 5 years ago, and at that point it was quite cost prohibitive. So I was working with little samples and sort of embedding them onto objects and then diffusing that, and was interested in how we experience it as we move around it. So that was really quite a turning point for me. I just came back to that work several years down the line and thought, oh, that was really interesting, but now how would I do it differently if it was to do it today? And I made a small kind of maquette, like a little box, diffused it with acrylic, and let it hang in the box, sort of free floats. And it was really, for me, it was really quite strong. And I thought, okay, well, what would happen if it went up in scale and became more of a like architectural scale?
Mm.
So it was really how it started.
Yeah, you've already kind of mentioned it, but you've got your current exhibition at Window Gallery titled A View for Each Eye. And yeah, it showcases this beautiful luminescent display of colour and its shifting movements through space. You've already kind of like gotten into it a little bit, but I want to backtrack a tad and kind of start off by speaking to the footing of this project and where it kind of arose from, what kind of, yeah, brought you to work with these materials and like work with this concept?
I think a turning point for me, I saw work by a Brazilian artist, Alio Atishia, and there was these, what I would describe as sort of exploded paintings, but there were also paintings and sculptural and installation, but they introduced sort of participation, so you walk around them and the colours change and the form changes, the colour recedes, and that had quite an effect on me. And so, yeah, I was trying to bring in participation, so sort of you have a different experience every sort of viewpoint from the work, and it's constantly shifting. It's static, obviously, but it is always moving. It's never the same image that you see.
Yeah, beautiful. And the way that you use colour within your work, it's almost like colour is this, yeah, you utilise it as if colour is a material itself, as if a painter would use it, but you utilise it with its own embodied lens. Do you want to speak a little bit to the role and importance of colour within this work and perhaps why you are drawn to it as kind of like a prominent material?
And a really important text that I read was Surface by Giuliana Bruno, who argues that we see surface and colour of surface as quite shallow, but it actually has more depth to it. It can invoke memory and thought and place. So it's creating more of a depth out of surface. And I'm attracted to the colour. I'm also interested, David Batchelor, artist and theorist, has a really interesting book called Chromophobia, and he argues that colour is seen as this otherness. It's in Western thought and Western critique, it's kind of denigrated as a lesser than art practice, as opposed to form and line that we sort of generate colour, we happens naturally and we just rearrange it. So he argues that it does have importance.
Yes, with colour, I've also noticed within that, that history of female artists, there's that, correlation with colour, and it's also that it's not as important, and it's like this topic that's like, oh, colour and da-da-da-da.
Yeah, it's superficial, right? Yeah. It's seen as quite shallow, and it's seen as feminine, cosmetic.
More like domestic in some sense, yeah.
David Batchelor also argues that it's quite queer, it's quite primitive, and even more problematic, it's quite oriental. He sort of argues that Eastern practices have traditionally been brilliant colourists. How do we distinguish Western practice from that? You know, its line and form has more importance.
Yeah, but I like, yes, line and form, but for me, colour is such a, it's not just...
It's everything, right?
It's everything. Yeah. Like, it's not like, oh, this is blue because it's blue and that's that. It's like each colour has such a feeling and a history. If you look back into, like, the pigments and the...
Yeah.
Like, such a rich history and such relation to feeling and mood. And it's like, I don't know why we disregard it.
Yeah.
So I think it's so beautiful that you're putting colour at the forefront of this and really bringing it, into that embodied space. In your exhibition text, you reference this bodily position to colour, the shifting of wavelengths of colour in relation to our bodily position. Do you want to speak a bit more to this, that element of colour in relation to our bodies?
For me, that essentially is the participation we have with it. So we're moving around it, kind of, it, in a sense, it's what you bring to it as well. So I guess the title For Each Eye also delves into everyone has a different way of perceiving it, perceiving colour, perceiving the forms. So it's moving around and hopefully moving through you, depending on, I don't know, you might spend 20 seconds or 2 minutes with it, but it does reward, I hope, at least rewards looking. It rewards these little moments that I've put in there. For example, I just chose to wrap the existing fluorescent lights that were there. And so when you approach them, they softly change as you get closer. There's little elements like that I wanted to, again, reward people for participating.
Yeah, I always think that within exhibition, the like relation to the body is such a big component to it, and shifts each viewing experience because everyone comes at it with their own, I don't know if this is weird to say, but like in their own body and their own things, and it's like also with yours having such a heightened quality of that bodily interaction as you shift in mood, and it really, not forces people, but invites people to engage with it at a different level and to, maybe shift their perspective on colour and how one might view a work.
Definitely.
In a gallery space. I also wanted to speak a bit about, in your text you also wrote about this, that memory of your father's black and white television, and now the shift to this chromatic colour usage that we surround ourselves with. Do you want to speak a little bit about that, transition of colour through time and how it kind of has that quite like generational shift with it?
Definitely. And that was in the room shape. What I was trying to evoke was what it brings up for me. So when I found out the material was developed by NASA to sort of block UV light, I then had that memory or that just sort of popped in my head. I remember my dad always explaining the moon landing, and I just remembered it in black and white when he was explaining it, because he was explaining it in the black and white image. And so that was really just, I just went there. So there's this nice sort of intergenerational experience. But there's also, again, David Batchelor, he mentions house. Colour is sometimes also used in like a fall into colour, and he references The Wizard of Oz. Mm. And so Dorothy is in the farm, black and white, and then falls into Oz,
yes.
Brilliant colour, and then returns back to black and white. So that was kind of what I was trying to get at, is just these different ways of seeing colour.
Yeah, beautiful. And do you want to speak a little bit to this material that you said NASA produced?
Crazy, right?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. Like, what could you tell me a bit about?
I know.
It?
I mean, I'm no scientist myself, but it is such like a Charmeleon type material. Obviously, Draconic glass has been around since ancient time, but they've developed in the space race a way of applying it on polycarbonate as sort of helmets or to block UV light again. But it's essentially just like thin, very thin metals that get vaporized in a vacuum chamber and then apply to the surface. So it's quite high tech.
Yeah.
But once I discovered it, I saw it, and I recognized it, I sort of see it out in the wild quite a lot. It's used in a lot of sort of architectural applications on facades, but also in like retail displays, in really commercial experiences. So I'm kind of interested in about that as well, taking the commercial material and then sort of elevating it, I guess.
Yeah, placing it in that art context what that shift kind of does for that material itself.
Mm.
So I'm very unfamiliar with this material. So there's no, when you're going through that making process, you don't have control over the colour?
Correct.
Correct, okay.
There's this nice dance because you try to control the material, and then eventually it kind of just controls you, and you kind of have to let that happen. I remember at one point as I was doing iterations, so I made the work in my garage turn studio, and then I made a little sort of scale replica as best as I could of the gallery with the spacing and a large sheet of perspex as the glass to try and investigate really how I could play with this material. How would it look draped? Also, how do I diffuse it? What's the best material to diffuse it? So no, I don't control the direct colours that come out of it, but I hope to control in the show. There's two wires that run across to hang it and to give it this sort of shower curtain type direction. And then it sort of folds in on itself and it projects colour in and out, all around. It's
wow.
That's kind of the only control I have.
Okay, wow, crazy. Because looking at it, if anyone goes to see it, which hopefully they do, because it's a window gallery is like this big glass container, and you really can't really tell what's behind that glass.
It takes a moment, I hope.
Yeah, even with my moment, I was still a bit like, it's got this real, I don't know, maybe you're not, but that mysterious quality, perhaps linking to that kind of like moon landing, that thing, that mysterious quality of like, I can't quite wrap my head around it. And that's this thing that you maybe, as a viewer, you can't quite reach, you can't quite touch.
Mm. It's sort of,
yeah,
it's only that front view, you can't go around, right?
No,
and the diffusion, I think, for me is kind of, it invokes memory. It's like a non-linear time image narrative, you could say, of working with time, with memory, and then again going back to that intergenerational memory invoking quality.
And was the gallery space of Window, you must have had like quite a big consideration with that, because it's quite a unique gallery space. Did you really hone into that viewing experience of that glass wall? Because is it quite different to how you've maybe used that material in the past?
Yeah, well, typically the material is just sort of applied to glass, the substrate, and it's flat. So I was more interested in, it's just so interesting off the roll. When you see the material rolled up, it's just quite magical. So how do I do that in space, basically? Yeah, how does it float in space? There was quite a lot of consideration about the distance to the front diffused panel of glass, too far back and it sort of disappears, too close and it becomes too obvious. So it was that sweet spot of finding it. It was quite a risk. I remember, because I was making it, generally would come home from my day job and then making it at night after the sun had gone down. And for a long time, I then realized, oh, this is going to be a day experience.
Yeah.
So I was quite a little bit anxious about whether or not it would actually work. And thankfully, it is different during the day, but I think it does, again, it has a different experience if you see it during the day or you see it through the window at night. It's quite different.
Yeah, there's heaps of different viewing options. It's kind of in this transitional space, also being in that foyer of the Auckland Uni Library. So it's got all of those people kind of walking through it, different times of day, seeing it from outside. It's, really beautiful and really, I'm trying to think of that word. It's like in like a kind of like threshold space, which I think is really, really lovely. And lastly, what are your hopes for viewers as they experience and engage with your work?
It's kind of just a celebration of joy, I hope. It is kind of, hopefully you're rewarded again for participating by looking. The further you look, you might notice new things. The closer you get, you might notice a different perspective, and then further back it's different. So it's kind of just what they bring to it and what memories and feelings it evokes for them.
That was Mitchell McGrath speaking to me about his current exhibition on at Window Gallery, A View for Each Eye, which is on until the 7th of January 2026. So go check that out.